Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Sox fans, here are the bastards of Boston baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The bastards are back for this early week edition of the podcast. We are brought to you in part by the Minute Media Podcast Network. The Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set against the Cleveland Indians, winning the series 2-1. It is their third straight series win. However, they do lose a game to the first-place Tampa Bay Rays. The Red Sox are now 8 games back and have a 2.5-game lead over the next wild card team, which is the Oakland A's. So the Red Sox still have that second spot. Quick disclaimer for any first-time listeners, this is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman coming to you from Lewiston, Maine. You can harass me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can also find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Co-hosting with me tonight from the city of Westwood, Massachusetts, Jason Kelly.
Oh. You know, I was having a really good day. Sox were up 2-0 in the series. Thought, okay, 4-0 lead at one point. I mean, after sitting through a 3-hour rain delay. And then you sit through the 3-hour rain delay only to have to sit through the Red Sox bullpen at the end, just peeing down their leg, as they always do. So kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth after the weekend, but I guess 2 out of 3, we'll take it at this point.
Yeah, it's a series win, and it's annoying to lose a game to the Rays, who just don't seem to lose ever. They were just playing the Baltimore Orioles, but
no,
we'll have them next. So 4-game set, you know, in the wildest of pipe dreams, maybe we can cut it down by 4 games, which is still seems like, you know, a insurmountable gap at that point. I mean, if we were 4 games back right now, I'd still be like, I don't know if we're going to do it, but, yeah. We are in the wild card and we can face the Yankees in 1 game and we've beaten them plenty this year. So we'll hope for that. But, so Red Sox Friday night, win that game 4-3, Eduardo Rodriguez on the mound. Saturday was another win, 5-3, with Nathan Eovaldi getting the start. And then today, Tanner Houck having one of the more wonkier pitching lines you'll ever see. We'll get to that later. Actually left the game with the lead, but the Red Sox do end up dropping that one 7-5. So blew the sweep, but like you said, a series win. Trying to chop down that Tampa Bay lead, but on that note, attention listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Boston, do we have a pew problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with the 4th generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. The Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker. It's like having a little astronaut to chop your worst weeds up top in your nose and ear. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. For a clean Trinity and beyond, your space balls will thank you. And that's probably the cleanest I've ever gotten through that. No pun intended.
Smooth as silk.
Yeah. Yeah. If anybody listened to the last episodes, which was deep dives, that was a struggle for me. I was getting lit up on the mount on that one. My command was off. Let's put it that way. Yeah. And if you haven't listened to that episode, it was a good one. We had a Kyle Schwarber versus JD Martinez debate. Which one should the Red Sox prioritize if JD opts out and Kyle Schwarber declines his mutual option, both of which are almost certainly going to happen? So we got into a nice little debate, and you can hear that on the last episode. So, getting into this series, Cleveland was a 500 team, a team that at face value the Red Sox should have done at least what they ultimately did do with 2 out of 3. So, we will get into that, and since it was a series win, we will start on the studs side. So, Jason, who do you have?
My stud is JD Martinez, and JD Martinez, rightfully so, has taken a lot of flack lately for his performance, or his lack of performance, rather. But look, he only played in 2 games this series. He played on Saturday and today, and he was hugely productive in both games, 5 for 9. He had the game-winning homer on Saturday. I mean, that was one of the biggest plays of the series, 3-run bomb to the opposite field in extra innings, from a guy who hasn't been hitting a ton of home runs lately. So that was great to see. Today, couple of hits, RBI double. So this was good to see, because JD Martinez has really struggled. The last 30 days, that batting average is going down. He's been hitting .245 the last month. That's not good enough for a guy in the middle of your lineup. And look, he was red hot beginning of the season, but ever since really June, July, and especially after the trade deadline, he's cooled off significantly. And I'm not going to say that he's looking like the JD Martinez of 2020, because that was an abomination. I mean, he was legitimately one of the worst players in baseball in 2020. So he hasn't quite been that bad, but the strikeouts have gone up. He's not walking as much. He's not hitting for power as much. So this weekend, to see him do that, to see him be productive, put the bat on the ball, drive in runs, and be that middle of the order threat that you need him to be, that was great to see. And hopefully he's waking up a little bit. Hopefully he realizes that, hey, Red Sox aren't out of this yet. They've got that second wild card spot. They're right now, they hold technically a playoff spot. I know they have to play their way in, but they are there, and they've got a huge series coming up against Tampa. So hopefully JD Martinez is awake, and this series this weekend kind of gave him a little bit of a spark, got him going a little bit, because this Red Sox team, they're going to go as far as that middle of the order carries them. And if JD Martinez turns back into a pumpkin for the rest of the month, then forget about it. They're not going to make it.
That certainly was a painful slump that he had coming into the series, and that's what led to the day off on Friday, like you said. And it just seems like at times he just has a Jackie Bradley type slump. It's briefer, but he's just completely lost at the plate. And I don't know if it's his pitch recognition where he just completely guesses wrong. And so, yeah, so he snapped out of it with some late inning heroics, and we were behind. So that was, you know, that was an absolutely clutch home run, kind of like what we're used to with him in years past. The night before, same thing, Jonathan Araúz just crushed
out
one
of nowhere.
Yeah, and that at bat, there were runners on first and second with Araúz, and he gave two of the worst bunt attempts I've ever seen. And then a pitch or two later in the same at-bat just crushes one. So
that went from looking like the worst at-bat ever to becoming one of the best. Because, yeah, those two bunt attempts were horrendous. And then it was just like, well, you've got to swing away with two strikes. And he nailed it. So kind of an unbelievable turnaround.
Yeah, absolutely. So Charlie's MIA, and he's trying to get in. So I forgot to say that he was MIA in the intro, but just sending him a quick text. Apparently he was having some Wi-Fi issues.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's a pretty good pretty good stud there, because we don't win that game. Here he is. We don't win game one without JD Martinez. So the tardy Charlie Smith is with us now, and no audio coming from him though. Don't know if he's on mute. So, Charlie, go ahead. I mean, if you can get your audio, go ahead with your stud for the series. That's where we're at.
Can you hear me right now?
Yep, go ahead.
So, Rafael Devers was the stud for me. He absolutely saved his weekend with his performance in Game 3. Originally, I was leaning in a different area, but Devers has been my go-to for most of this year. There have been a couple people that... I think in this series, I wanted it to be Hauk in this series, and started off great, for the lack of a better term. There are a couple things that could have gone better that unfortunately didn't at the end, didn't work out. But I don't think all those runs coming around were his fault. Devers just absolutely cracked it. Had two solo home runs today. The second was an absolute bomb. So I'm leaning with this guy to be your absolute hero for the rest of the year, too. Of the players that have kind of figured it out from your stars and whatnot, Devers seems to be the only one that has been consistent and found himself with somewhat with some regularity. JD's still missing in action. He still had a game here or there, but, dude, Devers all the way.
Yeah, he's definitely been a lot more consistent than Martinez, though Martinez had a pretty good series. Yeah, Jason, thoughts on Devers?
Yeah, the two bombs today were fantastic, and he's your big power bat now, so that's what he's got to do. What he can't do is go into these slumps where he seemingly disappears and looks lost at the plate, kind of like what we were talking about with JD. It's like, you know, some of these guys, they get red hot and they're the best hitter in baseball for like a 2 or 3 week stretch. And then they just go through a stretch where they look lost. And kind of like you said, it's like they look like Jackie Bradley all of a sudden. It's like that can't happen, or at least it can't happen all at once. And that was kind of what was going on with this offense. It was like, if Devers is off, but Martinez and Bogarts are hitting the crap out of the ball, then you sort of go, okay, whatever. But if Devers and Martinez are lost and Bogarts is, you know, getting a day off every other day because that's what he does, then the offense really struggles. So Devers has got to be your big-time power bat, left-hander, you know, clutch late, all of that going forward. He's as important as JD. He's just as important as Xander. That middle of your order has to carry this offense through the rest of the year, because I'm sorry, you're not going to get Bobby Dalbec going off against, you know, good teams going forward. He only goes off against the bad teams. So you're going to need those guys.
And it's too bad that this team's set up that we have to rely so heavily on our big three, Devers, Martinez, and Bogarts, and because that's just not sustainable. You need supporting cast members around them. So hopefully next year that will be the case. With Devers, though, 32 home runs on the year, 94 RBIs. If he has a smoking hot September, and we've got a fairly weak schedule for September. We got the Rays once or twice in there, Yankees once or twice, but for the most part, it's certainly easier than August and July. But if he is smoking hot in the month of September, he's got a chance for probably 42 to 45 home runs, and then maybe 120 ribbies. And last I checked, I'm not going to pull it up now. I think it was coming into this series. He was leading the league in doubles. So if Shohei Ohtani wasn't out of his mind right now in every aspect of the game, Devers would have a hell of a shot at it. I haven't looked at Vladimir's numbers, but he has to be up there. But Devers continues to be impressive nonetheless.
So, T, when you're looking at all of the players that have kind of it used to be like a two-pony race. It was Vlad Jr. or Shohei Ohtani. The Chicago White Sox have their first baseman right back in the mix of things, too, because he feels, or I think he's been forgotten. Abreu just has blown up because at one point I was like, oh, wow, Devers, you know, when he had his home run and cracked 30, I was like, all right, cool. Wait, he's not leading the league in RBIs? I thought he was. Who's ahead of him? Jose Abreu has quietly put together another fantastic season. Hmm. We have four people that are gunning for it, but I still don't know how you don't give it to either Vlad or Shohei Ohtani, at least right now. If Rafael Devers has 120 RBIs, then you have to at least consider his name in there, but I don't know how he's going to be able to. That means that he's going to have over 20 RBIs in the month of September, which, of course, is possible. But that's also assuming that he's going to go back to old Rafi Devers that was basically crashing it and cracking it for the beginning of the year. And I want to temper expectations because we had three people going off when he was going off. And right now, so far, it's like 1.5 are going off. I don't think he's going to quite hit 120. I think it's safe to say probably like 113, 114. 15 with 120 is like a real sweet stretch goal.
So I always, when it comes to like MVP races, especially with a month left to go, Vegas is always a good place to look to see what's they're sort of looking at. And they've got it as Ohtani and Guerrero 1-2. And then it tied for third everywhere you look. It's Marcus Semien, Matt Olson, Rafael Devers. So Devers is in there. He's in the discussion. And if he keeps getting red hot and keeps hitting for power, he's right up there.
He's number two in runs batted in, like Charlie said, but he's all the way down to 14th with OPS. So that's a little surprising. Bryce Harper is number one, believe it or not. So, but Guerrero seems to be just about top three or top five in just about every category. And then with Shohei, you can't ignore the pitching. I mean, he's just been so good. He'd be the Red Sox ace, basically, you know, just based on his numbers on paper. So, yeah, Shohei's going to get it, and I'm perfectly fine with that. Some honorable mentions to get to. No one else really stood out. Schwarber had a good game, too, but that was about it. Struck out three times today in the finale. Charlie, you're not on mute. All good. And 0-for-4 in game one, but still kind of a presence at that top of the order that we desperately needed all season. As far as pitching goes, Eduardo Rodriguez, after coming off a terrible start in his last outing, in which Cora ripped into him in the post game, came out in his start in game one with the Indians. Seven innings pitched, did give up eight hits, but three earned runs. One of those was in the seventh inning. He gave up a solo. Weirdly, though, only two strikeouts, but was managing to get all kinds of contact outs. Nathan Eovaldi, his normal stellar self, 5 1/3 innings pitched, gave up two runs. Both of those were in the second inning. One of them was on a solo shot by Franmil Reyes. Eovaldi doesn't give up too many home runs, but he did give up a solo there. But by and large, a very stellar outing. Garrett Whitlock had a clean inning of relief where he struck out two. Alex Cora pulled him in the next inning rather than let him try to close the game out, and Martin Perez proceeded to load the bases. So, wasn't impressed there. Tanner Houck, I don't know if he should be a stud or a dud or honorable or dishonorable, I should say. 5 1/3, that's the furthest he's gone, I think, all season, certainly since he's been back from his elbow issues. Only gave up one hit, but he walked four batters, hit two more, and only struck out three. So, I mean, he left with a lead, and if Taylor could have got out of that, the last two-thirds of that inning, he only would have given up one or two runs, Houck. But go ahead, Charlie.
What was it that you wanted him to go at least with Plawecki? What was your request?
I said at least.
I want at least.
Yeah. Before the start of the game, what Charlie's talking about, I had a tweet on the Bastards _ Boston account, which everybody should follow if you haven't already. And I said in the tweet, basically, that Kevin Plawecki will probably be best remembered as a good laundry cart pusher than he will be for gunning down runners at second base. And then I said, however, Houck can't seem to get through five innings with Christian Vasquez catching him, so why not Plawecki? And then, I don't know, 30 or 60 minutes later, Plawecki ended up being on the lineup card as the catcher, but I don't think it made a bit of a difference. Houck was just all over the place.
Do you think it was the team figuring it out? Or do you think it was just him just losing it? Like, exhaustion set in? Because he didn't have control. I mean, I had been getting little updates because I couldn't watch the first half of this game here from my good old dad. And he made it seem like Houck is throwing an absolute gem. No hits, no runs, no nothing, no problems. And then when I spoke to you, you caught me up to, you know, up to date with all the information. And it didn't seem like I was getting the full picture. I still think that once he gets stretched out a little bit more and he has the ability to go 75, 85 pitches on a consistent basis, I think that this is going to end in a different way. Because if you pulled him at five innings, we wouldn't be talking about him not doing that great. Yeah, the control would have been an issue, but it would have been like, do you guys remember when Edwin Jackson threw a no-hitter, but he walked nine guys and he threw like 137 pitches?
Yeah.
It was like that. Like, that was the impression I was getting, and I was able to watch some of the highlights after. And it just, if he could throw 140 pitches in a game, yeah, I could totally see him walking 10 and, you know, striking out six people and allowing no hits. I think it's a longevity issue. If he had the ability to go the distance, we wouldn't be as concerned, because this is still someone who I have penciled in the rotation for next season. I may not be the only one, but I know there are some naysayers that think this guy doesn't belong there.
Jason?
Yeah, it was kind of disappointing to see Houck not quite make it all the way through and have just a clean start, which is really what he needs, because we're all kind of rooting for him to be future rotation piece, guy you can build around, all of that. And it's just kind of the same old story. It's like, okay, once we get later into the game, third time through the order, whatever it is, it's just not quite there. And it wasn't so much that it all happened then. I think all day he was kind of just up and down. You know, like you said, too many walks, walking four guys, you know, just because you're not getting tagged with contact doesn't mean that you're pitching well. When your control is not good and you're walking guys, that's a problem. You know, that's like Garrett Richards-esque. So we don't want that. So Houck's got to figure it out here because his spot in the rotation is certainly not guaranteed. I think the Red Sox organization still has a lot of doubts about him. I'm not sure they fully trust him yet. I don't think Cora trusts him. So he needs to have cleaner starts going forward if he's going to be a future piece. You know, forget this year, because even if you make the playoffs, he's not going to be a guy that I think gets in there. He'll be sort of the odd man out. You only really need three or four starters in the playoffs. But for 2022, if he wants to be in that rotation, he needs to have much more cleaner, more professional starts than this.
Yeah, hopefully it's just a matter of, you know, having better command and mixing his pitches a little bit better. I mean, he's got a couple of different fastballs, a slider, and a split finger. So probably you would hope that throughout the winter they'll really focus on that and get him in. I mean, the Red Sox haven't developed a starting pitcher, as we've said, since either Lester or Buchholz, whichever way you want to go. And so he's this close. Like, he is so close to being a bona fide starting pitcher. You just hope they can dial him in and just kind of smooth things out, so that way he will be reliable for at least five innings every fifth day. So we'll see how it goes. Getting over to the dud side of things, Jason, who's your dud for the series?
So my dud, or duds, as I'm going to do this time around, I'm going to go a little more unconventional. I know we're only supposed to pick one person, but I'm going with the tandem that I've dubbed Hansel and Gretel, Hansel Robles, Austin Davis. I know it's two guys, but I view them as one collective bag of suck. And that's the collective bag of suck that your brilliant savant general manager decided to pick up at the trade deadline to help your struggling bullpen. Let's go get Hansel Robles, who the Minnesota Twins didn't want, and their bullpen sucks. And let's go get Austin Davis, who the Pittsburgh effing Pirates, who have nobody, didn't want. And now we see why. These guys blow. Like, these guys are so bad. And the fact that this was the answer for, hey, we have a bullpen that's getting a little taxed. Salamore is, you know, racking up innings. Matt Barnes is racking up innings, and he's starting to break down. Josh Taylor is racking up innings. And this is what Kyan Bloom went and got you. He went and got Hansel Robles and Austin Davis when he could have gotten guys like Ryan Tepera, who moved. He went to the White Sox. He's been great since he went to the White Sox. Like, there were other relievers on the market, in the middle of the market too, by the way, that he could have gotten. Because here's the thing. I'm not saying that Kyan Bloom had to go and get Craig Kimbrel. That was a stupid trade by the White Sox. Moronic trade by the White Sox to give up Nick Madrigal for a Craig Kimbrel. You didn't have to go and get Kimbrel. You didn't have to go and get top-end relievers. You just had to get guys that can pitch in the sixth, seventh, or eighth inning. You didn't need a closer. You had a closer. Your closer is Matt Barnes. So that's fine. And granted, he's really fallen off lately, but you could have gotten someone who can pitch the eighth inning, and hey, if we need to spot Matt Barnes, he can slide in there. He can close a game. Instead, you got these two bums, these two hacks, these two slobs who go out there and pee down their leg every time they're on the mound. This is a joke. Like, I can't believe that we're still watching this, and I can't believe that no one is more angry about Kyan Bloom about this. It's like, your bullpen needed help, because I think we all agree going into the deadline that the rotation was okay, right? The rotation wasn't perfect, but you had Sale coming back in some capacity. I know he's going to be limited with pitch counts and everything, but he was coming back. Eovaldi had been pitching pretty well. Pivetta had been pretty solid. And Eduardo is what he is, right? He's off some days. He's good other days. But you didn't have to go and spend or, you know, trade prospects for a starter. The rotation was fine. The bullpen clearly needed help. They did. And if Kyan Bloom's whole excuse is, well, we didn't have to go and really get anybody because Ryan Brazier's coming back. Don't you know? Ryan Brazier. Yeah, Ryan Brazier. That's what we're going to rely on now. So Ryan Brazier, Hansel Robles, Austin Davis. That's what your general manager, your brilliant messiah general manager decided that's what he's going to do for your bullpen. It's a joke. These guys suck. And now it's costing them games. Congratulations. It cost you a game today, a game that you should have won, but you lost because this is what you got for your bullpen. Thanks, Kaim.
So I've never been a fan. I was pretty adamant when they got Austin Davis. I was really upset because they got rid of the guy that I wanted to keep. So I haven't really been in his court at all, like even for a moment. And everyone would say, oh, but he's had five straight appearances. He hasn't allowed a run. And here we go, like the next Josh Taylor. Stop. Stop right there. I don't want to hear another damn word. Because this was the series that we really couldn't afford to see one of these two have a bad streak. Austin Davis didn't have one bad performance. He had two in three games. Just not getting it done. Although the first one wasn't bad, this one in game three more than made up for it. Like, it's just, I don't trust them. Hansel Robles has gotten rocked. Not had a bad start, like a bad game. He's had really, really bad appearances. Game-changing appearances. We're winning this game if it's not for these two clowns. So, Hansel and Gretel, I think that was, you were the first one out of the group to call them Hansel and Gretel on Twitter. But yeah, I don't feel good about it. They've been better, but better doesn't mean consistent, because when you're still having bad games regularly, you're consistently bad. It's like, oh my God, pure bliss. I forgot his name for about 2.5 seconds, Matt Hall. Like, it just, it reminds me of that when I see your name coming in. I don't feel good. It's like Matt Barnes closing out games. I don't feel very warm and fuzzy. I don't feel very good. It's like deciding to drive blindfolded. It's not safe. I wouldn't recommend it. And that's kind of how I feel one of these two clowns is in your is coming into the game. We could have swept. We didn't.
Well, today's loss, I'm putting squarely on Austin Davis. He had two outs. He was cruising through that inning with, you know, through two outs. Couldn't get that final one. Four straight hits were given up after that. And then I think he gave up actually three of those hits. And then Barnes came in and gave up a hit, which led to, you know, runs being charged to Davis. I'll say this, though. I have no confidence whatsoever in Hansel Robles. He had one good year. That was 2019. He's otherwise sucked every year on every team he's been with. There's no reason to think it's going to be any different with the Red Sox. Davis, I'm not super high on him, but I think he might be a little bit more salvageable, if not this year, maybe into next year. I think he's probably going to be in the bullpen to at least start next season. He was quietly on a pretty good run coming into today. He hadn't given up an earned run, earned or unearned run, I should say, since August 12th. So that was six straight appearances not having given up a run. He hadn't given up a walk in those straight in those appearances either. And on August 20th, he gave up two hits, labored a little bit, but nobody came in to score. So he was on a pretty decent run until today, and then just fell asleep with two outs in the inning to try to get that final one. And the Red Sox didn't sweep. I'll also say this. I think Matt Barnes was going to close the game out no matter what. So he could have blown it anyway. But there was just nobody else to go to. Everyone else, you know, was taxed. So
this is the problem. And I apologize for cutting you off.
That's okay.
Austin Davis has never been good. Like, you give him more than 5 to 10 innings for a season, you will be disappointed. You will be disappointed. It's not a guess. I don't trust Austin Davis. I haven't. And I can't believe this is what we got him because we needed a left-handed pitcher is the story we're being told. So you gave up on Michael Chavis for this? I just, oh God, it's literally the mentality that what I think about is when I think about that show that we all had, and I mentioned, you know, what player would you want for the Red Sox to get? And I said, Ryan McMahon, and you said, ugh, that's like that every single time I see this guy's name in there. I don't like it. Like, this bullpen, I'm not happy with. I'm not satisfied. I'm not content. They don't move the needle. I don't have confidence with this bullpen in the stretch. Say the Red Sox make the playoffs. I don't see it happening. Say they do. Do you trust any of these fools? I don't.
I think there are certain alignments that can be okay. None of them would include Davis or Robles in high leverage. I'll say this, though, about Davis. I'm just curious to see what he'll do on our program. I'm not super high on him, but, I mean, if it keeps Austin Bryce down in Pawtucket, just to try to tinker with Austin Davis a little bit, then that's fine with me. But we are getting help soon. Alex Cora didn't seem to give a post-game presser. I was looking through the beat writer's tweets, and there's nothing after the game being final. So I'm assuming where there was a delay, they quickly beelined it to the charter flight to head down to Tampa, where the Rays series will happen. But I was hoping they would have asked, when's Brazier going to be back? Because I think it could be any day now. I know Jason, not super excited, but if it keeps Davis and Robles down, I'll take a look at Ryan Brazier at this point. And Darwin's and Hernandez, too, I think should be back at some point this week. So when you factor in those guys, and then maybe Whitlock being the closer, he did pitch the ninth the other night. So I don't know if that was just that one time out, or if maybe Cora might be looking at that as his most viable option now. Well, I guess we'll find out a lot more in the Tampa series, but there's another guy too. He's not a popular name on this podcast, but he's been pitching so good. His initials are GR, just to appease Charlie. Charlie just can't handle the name. Yeah, I think he's going to be getting some high leverage, at least in the seventh inning, and while the rest of the bullpen sorts its way out. But Charlie, go ahead. Your dud for the series.
Easiest one for me, one of the easiest ones of this year, and that's Xander. 2-for-13, half your at-bats or strikeouts. You just didn't do it. You didn't do your job. And when people keep asking, or at least posing the question, who do you prioritize as your offseason / priority signing moving forward, Xander's still going to be in Boston next year anyways. He can opt out after 2022. He's getting paid. It's like I think it's the $20 million deal that he's getting annually for the next couple of years. I don't see him extending. I see him opting out. I see him opting out because he signed a team-friendly deal, and that's fine. But when your team needs you the most and you're not getting it done offensively, I want no part in it. I don't want the team to prioritize you as the major bat. I want the team to prioritize Rafael Devers. Xander Bogaerts is not the guy for me. And I have not been too thrilled with X ever since his comments that he made. And I will call him out for it. But easiest dud for me. 2-for-13. Nope.
And I know he's had some minor injuries in the last several weeks, but those comments he made about his extension on him likely opting out or wanting a much bigger deal from the Red Sox, that was also a turning point as well. He hasn't been the same since, but
nope.
Jason, your thoughts on Bogaerts?
Yeah, this is a tough one for me because I really do like Xander Bogaerts, and I view him as a cornerstone piece of this franchise. I think it's like him and Devers are the two cornerstones that you build the rest of this team around. That being said, I agree with Charlie, and I agree with you, Terry. I was not thrilled with those comments that he made. I thought, first of all, like, there's no reason to say that in the middle of the season. That's something you say in the off season. That's something you say, you know, when your team is not in the middle of a pennant race. And that coupled with sort of this weekend, the way that he played, you know, like you said, 2 for 13, just he was non-existent. This is why I tell people Xander Bogaerts cannot be the face of this franchise as much as I want him to be, but he can't. He's not a vocal leader, and he's not really a leader on the field because he takes days off, not just literally, but even when he's in the lineup, he'll take days off. He just, you know, he'll go 0-4 and you won't even notice him. And that's not good. And I know that a lot of people say, well, it's just his personality. He's not Dustin Pedroia. He's not going to dive headfirst for every ball, and he's not going to, you know, go out there, you know, grunting and, you know, whatever. Like, he's not going to be expressive. That's fine, but, like, it's really hard to have that type of personality and then disappear for games and weeks at a time and still want to be, you know, a franchise shortstop. It just doesn't add up. So, you know, he was invisible this series. For a guy who wants to be paid top dollar, for a guy who wants to be treated as a franchise shortstop, he's not playing like one, and he's not acting like one. So he needs to wake up big time.
So here's another reason why it drives me nuts, is when you look at Xander Bogaerts, you look at quality body of work. You want to look at someone defensively. You want to look at someone offensively. You're getting paid $20 million. This is someone who has 40 hits in the last 2 months. So 20 hits on average. Okay. And what about the damage? Like, what are we looking at? What are we getting? He's had 9 doubles, 7 homers, 21 RBIs. That's numbers that you could sometimes see from someone in a month, like a really crazy month. You're hitting 240 in the last 2 months. You're hitting over 320 the month before that. It was like 330 or something. 347, excuse me. He had 34 hits in that month alone. So you're matching 1 month's output with the last two. You can't afford to have that from your leader. Your comments be damned. Even if that wasn't the issue, there are still so many glaring holes. You're going to create another distraction for your team? That's selfish. And I get it. You have to be selfish. This is a business. You have to product. You have to market the number one important thing in your life as the player, yourself. And I get it. But you can't be upset when people get on you because you decide to make it all about you. I'm not a Xander fan, and I don't, a lot of people are, but I've been against it ever since that moment, and I will call it out every single time. You can't go from being one of the, you know, the best shortstops in all of baseball to what you're doing right now. That's, if you continue to give us that level of consistency, I'm sorry, I'm moving on from you. And there are other options, a lot less expensive, that could probably give us what you are giving us right now. So I don't need you.
Bogaerts in the last two series is 3 for 22. So getting absolutely killed there, just barely hitting 100 over the last two series. Since the All-Star break, he's only had 5 home runs, driven in 18 runs batted in. So those, he's sinking like a rock, and he was looking like he was going to be a top 5 or 6 MVP guy based on his first half. He's not even going to finish in the top 10 at this point. I was just looking through all the major categories. The only one he is currently top 10 in, he's like tied for 7th in doubles. But OPS, home runs, runs batted in, batting average, hits, all across the board, he's not in the top 10. So it's just crazy how he's just had this kind of fall from grace this season, the second half of the season, I mean. So he's got to get it together if this team is going to hang on to that second wild card spot. Maybe even take the first wild card seed away from the Yankees. It has to be with a productive Xander Bogaerts and not what he's giving us right now. So,
Terry, you brought up a really good point, and this is the thing. During the course of this entire season, he hasn't gone this many straight games without having a home run, having an RBI, scoring a run. Two straight series, no runs, no home runs, no RBIs. You're giving us... On the flip side, there's another player who I haven't really been a fan of, who has been performing over the last series-ish and a half, two series. It's like they switched, it's like they unzipped each other, like the skin, and then jumped into each other's bodies, and then that's basically what's been going on. You see Bobby D hitting home runs and knocking people in, and Xander Bogaerts just doing what he's just been doing. It's a weird feeling. It's weird for me to actually be talking positively about someone I wanted gone. It hurts.
Yeah, I typically do an eye roll every time Bobby D hits a home run, but I will say this for Bobby, and he was 2-for-6 in the series with a home run. If you're going to tell me right now he'll face lefties only, like they did with Mitch Moreland in 2020, I can sort of live with that. Ideally, I'd rather just have an everyday first baseman who can mash righties, lefties, and what have you. So we'll see what happens. But I'm kind of hoping with all this success he's had, albeit, as Jason said, against bad teams, I'm just hoping that's boosting his trade value for next year. go get Mitch Moreland on a one-year deal, and you know we'll ride it out that way. But some other dishonorables, let's see. We basically went through all of them. Barnes only pitched that one-third of an inning. Didn't look good, so we'll see what happens. I can't imagine he's going to find himself in the Tampa series. But Martin Perez also, like I said, loaded up the bases in that one inning. Only managed to record one out. I'm assuming when Brazier or Darwin's in gets called up, Perez is the odd man out at that point. I think it makes the most sense to DFA him. If not him, maybe Robles. But you got Garrett Richards, who can essentially fill the role that you're hoping Perez would. And Darwin's in as well can go 4, 5, 6 outs if needed. So he's a semi-long guy as well. Salamora just can't stop walking people. He did get out of that inning. It was a bases loaded jam. But if there was a base hit, we probably lose game two, then we lose the series. So this is another guy who can't seem to get hitters to swing at that splitter because it's not a strike. So they're not swinging at it. So he has to get it together as well to prevent those late inning implosions, much like we saw today with Davis. So any thoughts on any of the dishonorables?
So on Martin Perez, it's kind of interesting to see the difference between how he responded to being moved to the bullpen and how Garrett Richards has. And I actually thought Garrett Richards would be the one that would tank in the bullpen, because I didn't think that his mentality, that he could handle it. He seems like a guy that just, as soon as one thing goes wrong, it's just, you know, he spirals. But he's picked it up, and I think he's now, I'm sure he's still not thrilled about being in the bullpen. I mean, I can't blame him. Guy wants to be a starting pitcher. So, you know, and for him, I really don't think it's about the contract or the money. I think he just views himself as a starting pitcher, and that's it. But he's picked it up, and he's done a great job out of the bullpen. While Martin Perez, and Terry, you've brought it up before, he gives up on himself very easily. And it looks like he's kind of done that again, going to the bullpen. He just goes, oh, okay, I guess I'm just not good enough. And his performance reflects it. So it's disappointing, because if he could have responded the same way that Richards did, then all of a sudden your bullpen is looking pretty good. You know, not as bad as we thought, especially with Darwin's in and, you know, Ryan Brazier, as much as I'm not a fan of him, but Ryan Brazier is an upgrade over someone like Hansel Robles. So if those guys were to come back and Perez and Richards were both firing out of the bullpen, then all of a sudden it doesn't look that bad. But Perez just kind of, he's just dead weight out there. And it's disappointing. It really is.
So to your point, I didn't think that it was going to be Garrett Richards that did better between Martin Perez and him. I actually didn't have much hope for either one, to be honest. But between the two, I really thought my dud on the year was going to do it and just really look bad, worse than some of the relievers that we have. What has Xander? Good God, probably do better than Martin Perez. What has Garrett Richards done as a member of the non-rotation? He has pitched in six games, I believe now, 10 and a third innings pitched, 3 walks, 12 strikeouts, 1 run on 7 hits. His worst real performance was against, I think, the Baltimore Orioles. He had 4 hits allowed, and since then he's allowed 1 run on 3 hits. He didn't allow a base hit against New York, and he came out 4 innings, struck out 5. That was the last pitching line I thought that Garrett Richards was going to have. He's doing his best Garrett Whitlock impression of coming out there for more than an inning, doing his best to minimize damage / not even allow any damage. And I'm shocked that I'm actually saying something nice about him, to be completely honest.
His last start before getting demoted, he actually wasn't that bad in that start. And I want to say the start before that wasn't terrible either. I think he kind of walked the tightrope a little bit, but I just saw enough there that I thought he would be viable in some role. Did I think he was going to potentially be an everyday seventh or eighth inning guy? No, absolutely not. But he's risen to the occasion. And Jason, you're saying he's not thrilled with it. When he came out of the game on Saturday, he was getting high fives from everyone, and you could just tell that, at least for that night, he was really feeling it. So hopefully he kind of embraces it going forward. He's 32, 33 years old, something like that, maybe even 34. So at this point in his career, he's just hoping to stay relevant in some way to get the contract for the next year and the year after. We're going to be getting into him a little bit more in the next episode, which is Totally Legit or Calling the Cops. So stay tuned. That's going to be a fun episode with some of the topics I have lined up. So that one will be released 24 hours after this one. I guess that will about do it. So we'll move on to the Tampa Red Sox series here. We don't have pitching matchups for Tuesday. Neither team has announced a starter. So we got Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, though. So we'll just kind of go by those matchups. Monday, and I think they're all 7. Yeah, they're all 7:10 starts, which I like. I'm a primetime guy, so Monday night, 7:10 at the Trop, Nick Pivetta versus Luis Patino. The good news is, very recently we put up 4 runs on Patino. The bad news is, Nick Pivetta has sucked in his last 2. 4 innings pitched in his last outing, only 1 2/3 in his outing before that. That was against the Yankees, who thumped him. So the Rays are catching Pivetta at just the right time. And I'm just going to say right away, this game's a loss. But how do you guys see it?
I agree. Yeah, I think Tampa's catching Pivetta at a bad time. He's going through a slide right now. I think that we were, in a way, maybe kind of lucky to get as much out of Pivetta as we did for the majority of this season. And I still think that he might have some good starts left in him. But this Tampa team just doesn't effing lose. They just never seem to lose. And I just think that they're going to see a guy like Pivetta. They've seen him before. They know what to expect. And unless Pivetta is on his A game, which he hasn't been lately, it's a loss. So I think that's a loss.
I agree. Pivetta and Luis Patino are two of the folks that have pretty similar numbers, but because according to ESPN, Sale's pitching both Tuesday and Wednesday night, which I don't see happening. I think we're going to lose this series. We're going to be lucky if we can salvage a split, but it's going to be a really daunting task to face the next 13 opponents as far as games go, because you've got Tampa for 4, you get Cleveland again for 3, Tampa again for 3, and then Chicago for 3 more. Ouch. That hurts. You need to go .500 in these series, and I don't see it happening. So Pivetta against Patino, not fun. And Terry, you already said it. I think just passing the eye test, Patino's going to give you six. Pivetta, I don't even know with Plawecki if you're going to get five, to be honest. And this is, you know, this is cute. This has been a fun little streak where we've been able to win a couple games. But I think we need to temper expectations. We were able to take two out of three twice. I think it's about to get ugly again.
It could be back to reality, you know, based on what we saw for the first 3 weeks of August. It should also be pointed out we're not going to have Kike Hernandez. We're not going to have Christian Arroyo. We don't know when Hunter Renfro is coming back. I'd be surprised if it's not within the next day or two. But his father unfortunately passed away after a four-year cancer battle. And if you want to look it up, Renfro had a nice little tribute for his father, and his obituary that was posted was very nice as well. So really unfortunate that Renfro lost his father, who is only 57 years old, by the way. So, but his funeral, I think, happened yesterday. So, I mean, if he might miss another game or two, but I don't think he'll miss the whole series. Let's put it that way. So, three guys you absolutely need in your lineup, and we're not going to have them. And Duran shows flashes, but he just hasn't had that breakthrough series yet. So we'll see. I'm a bit of a Duran apologist for now. Anyway, game two, TBD versus TBD. I'm going to take Tampa in a TBD versus TBD every time, because they've got the bullpen, and we can't win bullpen games. We're off balance the whole time, and it's like we're playing Marco Polo out there, you know, with our eyes closed. We just can't hit.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
How much faith do you have in a team if you have a TBD TBD and we automatically are going opposing team? Like, I don't want to be the one that everyone's like, geez, here we go. Here's the negative Nancy again, because there's been a few of those on Twitter recently. Although I'll say this much, the last couple days, I haven't been as vocal and I haven't gotten as many DMs, which is sad because I feel lonely when I don't get some hate. But as soon as I saw, you know, Sale pitching twice, I'm like, well, he's not pitching. And well, you don't have a twin Sale. Who do you have, and who could they potentially have? Thank God it's not McClanahan game two. Unfortunately, this is the weekend we still have to face him, though. We face him twice, this series and the next one.
Yeah, I have no problem being the negative Nancy. You should not have a TBD game against a division rival who you are now chasing because you pissed away the lead earlier a couple weeks ago. So that's not good enough. And in terms of who it's going to be, like, if we're going bullpen versus bullpen, you're looking at, like, Martin Perez for us. Great. That'll be fun. Against, you know, what Tampa's going to throw out there, which is, like, that Rasmussen kid who shut us down before. Our old friend Colin McHugh will probably get in there, and he'll kick our ass because that's karma. Tampa just has better arms. So if it really does come down to just Tuesday's going to be a bullpen game between the two, Tampa's got more bullets. So yeah, chalk that one up for a loss.
Tampa Bay is also the new New York Yankees over the last 2 weeks. They haven't lost. They've won seven in a row. Like, the Yankees won, I think it was 11 straight or 12 straight, and then they lost. And they've got a sizable lead. Tampa Bay is just, you can't even see them. You need binoculars to see where they are in first place. We're not catching it. And I remember twice this year I said, oh, well, there goes the first place lead, and we're not going to, this is going to be the closest we could come to second place. And it got closer, and then reality kicked in, and we all were left with our pants down, which isn't a fun feeling. So Rasmussen actually, he's pitching in this series too.
Yeah, that's the Wednesday game.
Yeah, and I think that's the only one that all three of us can say confidently is going to go the Red Sox way, if we're being hopeful.
I don't know.
Come on. We got to give Sale. I can't go against Chris Sale, but you guys already know this. You know how I feel about Chris Sale. I won't go against him. This is his first real test. He's had three, I'll say 2.5 cupcakes. This is going to be his first real one.
All three were last place teams that he's faced. in their respective divisions. So
that's the thing. That's the thing. I talked about it last time. I said, yep, all you people throwing the Chris Sale parade, he faced a bunch of bums. Now he's facing a first place team. I'm giving that one a loss. I don't think that Chris Sale's going to get like shelled. Okay. I just think that he's probably going to have a few more hiccups than he's had. He might give up like 3 runs, maybe 4. And I just don't trust this Red Sox offense to come back. So sorry, I'm giving that one a loss.
He might not get shelled, but he might get slapped around a little bit. And has he gone more than 5 innings? I don't think he has yet. And no. So then you're relying on a bullpen that you have some severe trust issues with. And that's game 3. I have a feeling Garrett Richards is going to start that TBD game. It makes the most sense based on what you're seeing out of Perez. So if Richards is going to go 3, 4, 5 innings on Tuesday, not going to be available to come try to bail out Chris Sale. So I'm going to say it's a loss.
Okay. So, all right, pause. Pivetta, loss. Yep. TBD, loss. Chris Sale, loss. You guys think that there's a chance that we're going to beat McClanahan? That means you guys think we're going to get swept.
Is that Jason, the E-Rod game? Doing? Oh, yeah.
That's exactly game. What's going to happen. Yeah.
I think we win one. I think we go 1-3 in this 4-game set. We blow up Tampa Bay's little win streak. Come on, Terry, please give me one.
We're getting swept. I think Rodriguez is going to get slapped as well by that team in the Trop. I don't think he pitches very well. I don't have his numbers for that stadium up, but I think the Red Sox are getting swept. I think it's back to reality. We're playing a first place team. We might be playing the eventual World Series champions here, if we're being completely honest.
It's fair, and I agree. I don't trust Eduardo Rodriguez in the Trop. I don't think historically he pitches very well there. And you're going up against this McClanahan kid. He's just going to shove the baseball up your ass, and that's it. This lineup's not going to do anything against him. So especially if Xander Bogaerts is still sleepwalking his way through the rest of the season. So yeah, it's a sweep.
I'm offended.
Suddenly
I'm hurt. Like I'm actually really bothered right now, because this is the person I was, you know, this is one of the questions that I was asked a couple of weeks. I'm not really offended. It takes a lot more for me to get offended, but this was one of the questions that I was asked. What would it take the Red Sox? What are they going to have to do in order for them to make the playoffs? And I'm going to be one of the first ones to say, I don't think it's happening. I really don't. Terry and I have been pretty aligned. This is one of the first times we're not aligned on a record, a certain series, a certain player. Chris Sale had to do well from here on to the rest of the season. Like wins, quality starts, not giving up stupid hits, stupid games. And yes, he's had some cupcake opponents. Yes, they've been the last teams in their division. If Chris Sale can beat Tampa Bay in this series, will you both publicly next Sunday admit that you were wrong when he wins his performance? Because I really hope I don't have to post something publicly saying, damn, I was wrong again for 2021. I know Jason's going to have something to counter here. Jason, go.
So I will apologize if they win because of Chris Sale. If they win 9-7 when Chris Sale's well out of the game, then it doesn't count. So whatever. But if they win like 3-0 and Chris Sale gives you 6 shutout innings as a result of that, fine. Yeah, I'll give you a tepid apology, but I will give an apology. But only if they win because of him.
I'm pulling up some stats right now, which I should have. I think Tampa is one of the better lefty hitting teams. Well, not as great as I thought there.
Chris Sale at Tropicana. Ready, kids? 5-3 with a 2.01 ERA in 11 games with 10 started. He does have a shutout there. He has 108 strikeouts and 71 2/3 with only 7 home runs given. I feel really good about this game. I feel so good about this game. So good. We're winning this game.
The Rays actually rank 8th overall against lefties, so not too bad. They're in the top half of teams that hit well against lefties, but I just feel like this is the best offensive team that Chris Sale will have faced, and I just don't think he's all the way back yet. This is part of the recovery, I feel like, and he needs to be getting guys out on more than just a slider, really. And once he does that, then I'll feel a lot better. But so Jason and I have the sweep for the Rays, 4-0. Red Sox will lose all 4. Charlie is giving them game 3. So we'll see. I mean, there could be an offensive explosion in any of those games, and maybe that's how the Red Sox do it. But we will be back 24 hours from now to do Totally Legit or Calling the Cops, one of the more fun episodes we do during the month. We do it twice a month, so tune in for that. Everybody have a good start to your work week. Take care.